the general class, the armed forces of the US, China, Russia, and France as Tier 1 powers, with Germany and Italy representing Tier 2 armies. Several unnamed British defense sources confirmed to the broadcaster that the nation's military is currently in a sorry state. One official was quoted as saying it's an entire service unable to protect the UK and our allies for a decade. The UK military would reportedly run out of ammunition in a few days if a conflict broke out. Moreover, the armed forces would likely be unable to defend the skies against the level of missile and drone strikes currently seen in Ukraine, the broadcaster claimed. The report said that 10 Downing Street has repeatedly cut the defense budget following the end of Cold War, leaving the British Army with hardware that is at least 30 years old and in dire need of replacement. London's active role in supplying Ukraine with weapons over the past 11 months has further diluted its own fighting capabilities, the news outlet said. Another major issue highlighted by anonymous defense sources is chronic staffing shortages. With only 76,000 personnel, the British Armed Forces are less than half the size they were in 1990, the Sky News claims. However, according to the government's plans, the military will shed 3,000 more troops down the road, while new weaponry is not expected to be procured for a few years, the report notes. Earlier, Conservative Defense Committee Chairman Tobias Elwood, according to Sky News, said people should be very concerned about the armed forces' current capabilities. Sky News said the senior Tory called on the government to reverse soothing cuts to the army because its equipment has become obsolete. Mr. Elwood said there had been huge investments into the Royal Navy and Royal Air Force in recent years, but added the army is in a dire state. He continued, "Our army is simply too small. We have cut down by 10,000 troops." France and Germany have announced plans to boost defense spending significantly. Prime Minister Sunak has yet to make any meaningful pledge to expand his defense coffers, instead pursuing a refresh of a review of defense policy that is due to be published on March 7th, ahead of a spring budget that will signal whether there is any new money for the military. A crisis in defense has been a generation in the making following repeated reductions in the size of the three armed services since the end of the Cold War by successive Conservative, Coalition and Labour governments to save money for peacetime priorities. In 2020, Boris Johnson, as Prime Minister of the UK, increased defense spending by £16 billion, the biggest uplift since the Cold War, but not enough to plug the gaps. Sunak has so far resisted calls to follow his predecessor, Liz Truss, to lift defense spending to 3% of GDP by 2030, up from just over 2% at present.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Thank you. که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا، ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Today's world is not to let two powers do whatever they wish, and a few people in a country shape the destiny of a nation. Ulama and intellectuals had better get closer to nations and bring them into consideration prior to the general transformation and treat their people as prescribed by the Holy Quran and tradition of Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny. In this way, they can attack the attention of nations and remove or diminish the division emerging between the intellectuals of every society and the toiling poor masses of people.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the Spring of the Truth from Arab English Radio. This is Ali and we are going to talk about Imam Khomeini's viewpoints with regard to the government. And in a statement, Imam Rahmatullah Ali says that make sure you treat people well. That is, Imam addressing the Islamic government and also the head of the government in Islamic Republic and also the statesman. Imam tells them, make sure you treat people well. These are God's servants. Be kind to them. Everywhere, everyone, all people together should be serious that everyone is good together. Create a fraternal environment, a brotherly environment. Actually, Imam Rahmatullah Ali is following the same line that he had in his holy life while he was alive. He was saying that the government and the statesmen should be at the service of the people. He tells them you have to treat them well, the same way that an Islamic model, an Islamic leader is supposed to treat people.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi, sallallahu alayhi.
People in their minds have the treatment of the Holy Prophet and Imam Ali and the other infallibles in their minds, that they have the cases of, for example, Imam Ali alayhi salam behaving and treating those who have been his enemies and those who have been, for example, been in the other front, the way that he treated them, how kind and how beautiful it was. So they have these samples and evidences in mind. Imam wants them to follow the same line and the same treatment. And even tells the people, you have to be good with each other. You have to create a sort of brotherly environment among yourselves. That is, a sort of, let's say, friendship should be spread in the society, not enmity of the other brother or sister in faith. From here, we can understand that how important the people were in the eyes of Imam Rahmatullahi rather than the statesmen themselves. Because when he orders the statesmen that you have to treat them well, it means that the other side is important, that is the people. So Imam Rahmatullahi first addresses the statesmen, the head of the government and the statesmen, and second tells the people, even among yourselves, you have to create a brotherly environment. Because in an Islamic environment, even if there is any mistake, that mistake is going to be ignored. Because in an Islamic worldview, no one is going to answer back a bad action with a worse action.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha
Food for Thought.
Hello everyone, and here is some interesting points to ponder upon as elucidated to us by the leader of the pious and the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him. The whole good is gathered in three characters: consideration, silence, and wording. Every consideration that lacks learning lessons is inattention. Every silence that lacks thinking is inadvertence. And every wording that lacks mention of God is nonsense. Blessed are those whose consideration teaches them lessons, whose silence causes them to think, and whose wording is mention of God, who weep for their sins and save people from their evil.
The very first revolution that started with the people, continued with the people, did not change its word, did not change its way, did not decrease or increase its goals, is the Islamic Revolution of Iran. Ayatollah Khamenei.
جانم تپشم سخنم باشد وطنم وطنم ای خان که گوهر خیز بهره وطنم قدمم عشقم سخنم قسمم از عاشقی لبریز.
Congratulations on the victory anniversary of the Islamic Revolution.
The Qasr Prison.
Part 1.
Tehran. The country is on the edge of a precipice. Street clashes are raging between the army and the people. Endless strikes are crippling the country. Prime ministers are being ousted one after another, and foreign nationals leaving the country. The Shah is helpless. The Shah is hopeless. Nothing can assuage the anger of the nation. A revolution is in sight. October 24th, 1978. Tehran, the Qasr prison. A few months before the Islamic Revolution of Iran, a great number of political prisoners are released after years of being in prison and under torture. Since the beginning of the Pahlavi dynasty, the Qasr prison had been the graveyard of many political opponents. But within a few months, it would fall into the hands of revolutionaries and a new chapter in the history of this edifice would begin. The name of this prison still conjures up images of many contemporary Iranian figures that fought heart and soul against the Pahlavi regime. The Qasr prison. Over the last two centuries, this building has undergone many fundamental changes, each one mirroring part of this land's history. Tehran, the Qasr Garden Museum. In 2001, the Qasr prison was closed down after 76 years. In a 10-year project, the municipality of Tehran converted it into the Qasr Garden Museum. The museum has three main parts: the Markov prison, the political prison, and a large garden the prisons are located in. In the Garden Museum, exhibition stands have been set up, each one representing a critical moment in the history of Iran. A number of political prisoners during the Pahlavi era are here to recount their first-hand experiences for visitors. The building is located in the center of Tehran, but around 200 years ago, during the Qajar dynasty, it was miles away from the city, in a district known as Khurram Abad Hills. In 1798, Fath Ali Shah, the second king of the Qajar dynasty, ordered a recreational palace to be built outside Tehran, a great palace that cost the court dearly.
Tehrani che ma emruz ba in gostare va azamat shahedon hastim.
During the early years of the Qajar dynasty, Tehran, which was the capital city of the country, was about 6 kilometers away from where the Qasr Garden Museum is now located in. In that era, this place was a green region with nice weather, to an extent that at the time it was known as Khurram Abad, or a verdant place.
Iranian palaces share a similar structure: a large garden with small brooks running through, a stately summer house in the middle, and a luxurious mansion at the end with numerous rooms for the Shah and his wives. It is said the palace cost the Shah 400,000 tomans, a huge sum of money in those days. Many foreigners visited the palace, among them Samuel G.W. Benjamin, the U.S. ambassador to Tehran, Pierre Amédée Joubert, Napoleon Bonaparte's envoy to the court of Fath Ali Shah, and Madame Carla Serena. Visiting the palace, Madame Serena was impressed by the paintings she saw there. Writing in her travel log, "The palace has been heavenly decorated, and the paintings done in the most delicate fashion." In 1806, His Majesty spent 3 months of March, April, and May at this palace. But the glory days didn't last long. During the reign of Nasruddin Shah, the palace fell from grace and, abandoned, a devastating flood razed it to the ground. After that, its precincts were used as military camps and makeshift war prisons. But the future had something else in store. When Reza Shah came to the throne, the country's penal system needed a complete overhaul. The number of prisoners was growing and the old prisons no longer met international standards. The government had to establish modern prisons and recognize civil rights for its convicts.
During the Qajar dynasty, prison was not basically like the one in the Pahlavi era. It was a small building made up of 3 rooms and some rooms in the basement. This was the police's detention center during the Qajar dynasty. But with the growing confrontation between the Iranian nation and the Pahlavi regime, the number of prisoners increased and the regime was prompted to establish a big prison.
The Qajari prisons were old and small, more like dungeons than modern prisons, and couldn't accommodate the increasing number of prisoners. Brigadier Mohammad Dargahi, the Tehran chief of police, requested a new and larger prison. In 1927, Reza Shah commissioned Nikolai Markov, an Iranian architect of Georgian descent, to build the prison. Working for the municipality of Tehran, he had designed many buildings, including Tehran's post office and telecommunications and Alborz High School. Markov decided to build the prison in the south part of the dilapidated palace. The prison took 2 years to complete. In December 1929, it was opened with 192 rooms, designed to house 800 prisoners. In the opening ceremony, Brigadier Dargahi was showing the new prison to Reza Shah and other high-ranking officials. When the group reached the iron cell, the brigadier opened the door for the Shah and asked him and his entourage to step in. But the Shah refused to enter when he was warned by his court minister of a possible coup d'etat. 2 days later, Brigadier Dargahi was relieved of his command and became the first prisoner of this macabre prison. Under Reza Shah, the Ghass prison was the only prison in Tehran. In those days, prisoners were kept together without any classification. Many scholars, writers and poets spent years of their lives within its walls. Muhammad Farrokhi Yazdi, a well-known poet, was one of them. His revolutionary poems were so critical of the regime that he was imprisoned and his lips sewn together with needle and thread. It is widely believed he was put to death at the prison by venous air injection. In the past, there were two underground canals that supplied drinking and irrigation water to the palace. Years later, when the palace was converted into the prison, the two canals had gushed out to the surface, and prisoners would quench their thirst from the freezing water. Hence the Persian idiom, to drink cool water, was coined. An idiom with a pleasant literal meaning, but an unpleasant reference. Shot in 1958, the footage shows prisoners busy with various activities. The edifice has seen many hard days when Iran, under the boots of Russian and English troops during World War II, was occupied and ruined, accused of being a nest for German spies. They destroyed the country's army, toppled Reza Shah from the throne, forcing him to exile, and made his son Mohammad Reza the king of Iran. The occupying forces took all national resources into their hands, letting thousands of Iranians starve to death. The year 1953 is a year indelibly imprinted on the mind of the edifice. That year, Dr. Mohammad Mossadegh, the Prime Minister at the time, nationalised the oil industry, a success that enraged the United Kingdom and the United States of America. On the 19th of August 1953, in an Anglo-American coup, the Prime Minister was removed from power and many Iranian nationalists arrested. The edifice bore witness to the demise of a nation's hope. Mohammad Reza Shah, who had fled the country, returned a few days after the coup.
اگر اون نهضت به شکست منجر نمی‌شد، عملاً ملت ایران در
It's quite natural that hadn't that movement failed, the Iranian nation would have continued its journey toward its historical perfection in a natural fashion and experienced its local balanced development. But the meddling in the national movement by imperial powers, that is the US and the UK, interrupted the current of balance, intrinsic development in Iranian society.
After the 1953 coup d'etat, the nation's pent-up anger came to the surface every now and then, while the regime searched desperately for ways to curb the situation. In the mid-1950s, a new organization was established with the help of the CIA and the Mossad. SAVAK, or the Organization of Intelligence and National Security, aimed to counteract any security threat to the country. Dr. Javad Mansouri was a political prisoner before the 1979 revolution in different prisons across the country.
بعد از کودتای 28 مرداد 1332
After the 1953 coup d'etat, they decided to have a powerful organization to suppress the Iranian anti-imperialist movement, especially since the movement had continued for a long time and the regime was impotent. So in 1956, the bill was officially put forward and approved in Parliament, and with a design by the CIA, this organization was established. The CIA had even an office in Savak, and all plans, information exchanges, training, equipment were from the CIA.
کل برنامه‌ها، مبادله اطلاعات، آموزش، تجهیزات با CIA بود.
Nipping any protest in the bud, Savak planned to round up all political dissidents in the country. A need for more prisons was urgent now. New prisons were built around the Markov prison. One of them was for political prisoners, where a large number of political opponents of different trends spent years of their lives.
دقیقاً بعد از کودتای 28 مرداد 1332 است که باز هم
Right after the 1953 coup d'etat, again due to the increase in the number of political prisoners and their inherent difference from criminals in the early 1950s, a separate building was officially built as the political prison.
بخش مستقل و ساختمان مستقلی به عنوان زندان سیاسی بخش سیاسی زندان ساخته میشه.
Of those prisoners, some work as docents at the Garden Museum, telling visitors their stories of the hardship they experienced there. Mr. Hussein Khan Ali is one of them. As a political dissident during the 1960s, he spent 5 years in the Shah's prisons.
There was a man in this prison for 30 years, Safar Khan Qahramanian. This man was for a long time in this room. For 16 years since he was arrested, no one was allowed to visit him. After 16 years, he was called up to the meeting room. He couldn't believe it. He was called a few times and he finally went to the meeting room. When he went there, he saw a woman with a little child and a man with her. The woman called him over. As he stood in front of her in the meeting room, she said, "Father, I'm your daughter. This is my child and this is my husband." Of all his family, only that girl had been left for him. All others had passed away. And that girl came here every week for the last remaining 14 years to visit her father.
After the events of June 1963, led by Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, SAVAK, an intelligence agency, turned into a secret police to crush any signs of revolt. And the Iron Fist became the signature of this fearsome organization. Habeas corpus was no longer a right for all people, and forced confessions and long detentions became Savak's repeat prescription for any political dissident.
In 1963, after the demonstrations of June the 5th and 6th, it was decided that suppressing the opponents had to be more vigorous and more extensive, and the opponents had to be treated more violently. It was here that the Mossad came to help Savak, and the Mossad also established an office in Savak and began to train, equip, and exchange information with Sabak.
The 1953 coup ushered in the emergence of leftist parties. Though they couldn't play an important role in the political arena of a religious country like Iran, while the religious movement led by Ayatollah Khomeini aimed to raise public awareness, the leftist groups took arms to fight against the regime. Mr. Davood As'adi Khamenei was a founding member of the Islamic Society of Students in Stockholm. In 1977, soon after his return to Iran, As'adi was arrested for political activities inside the country. After a six-month interrogation, he was transferred to the Qasr prison. For him, there were two main ideologies in the prison.
In those days, there were two points of view for the struggle. Some held that the struggle must be a cultural struggle. From a cultural perspective, the society must reach a level so as not to accept a person as Shah. But there were some people that believed in the armed struggle. They aimed to announce their stance by killing the people near the Shah. And among those two groups, there were some people that believed in a combination of a cultural and an armed struggle. Anyway, this issue that the movement must be purely cultural was one of the views at the time which was preferred by many figures, that is, those who were intellectual.
In 1972, as the armed struggle against the Pahlavi regime gathered momentum, the Joint Counter-Sabotage Committee was founded, aiming to establish close liaison between different security agencies and armed forces to confront the opponents. At the same time, a new prison was given to the committee. Many prisoners were killed in this prison under the brutal torture of Savak agents. Dr. Mansouri was in prison both before and after 1971. During his second imprisonment in the Joint Counter-Sabotage Committee prison, he suffered harsh interrogation and harrowing tortures.
As sal 50 regime shah barkhordesh ba zindaniyan siyasi besyar khashin khasmane.
From the year 1971, the Pahlavi regime treated political prisoners very brutally and revengefully. Before that, they would treat a political prisoner like a bankrupt in a very ordinary way. But from 1971 on, they were facing people they considered as their sworn enemies who intended to overthrow the regime. The treatment was so brutal that they thought no one would dare go this way or that prisoners would never resume their activities after being released.
After the year 1971, the regime had initiated a shake-up in the way they treated political dissidents. Almost all of those arrested for political reasons underwent long, excruciating interrogations.
یک روز عصری حالا گویا بازجوها بیکار بودن.
One afternoon, it seemed that the interrogators had nothing to do and were bored. They called me and another young man who had come from abroad and I didn't know him. They put us in front of each other, forcing us to beat each other, but we didn't. They told him to beat me. He refused and therefore they gave him a beating. Then they left him alone and told me to beat him. I also refused and then they gave me a beating. They beat me very hard. Then another interrogator arrived and said, I know this guy. He is not an important person. Take him to the cell and release him tomorrow. They grabbed my arms and dragged me back into the cell. One week passed by, but no one came to release me. After 1 week, they called me and took me directly to the torture room. Usually they would take us to the interrogation room and then to the torture room. They took me directly to the torture room. They aimed to break one's concentration so that one couldn't speak about anything in a measured way.
After endless sessions of interrogation and trials that could take several months, they would be sent to one of the political prisons, including the Qasr prison.
تمام طول مدتی که زندانی در کمیته بود اصلا خانواده از این اطلاع نداشتن.
During the time the prison was in the committee, his family would never know of him at all. One could be there for a year or more or less. Whenever their families would go, for example, to Evin Penitentiary, they couldn't find their children. That's why some families knew their children were there.
در صورتی بعضی از خانواده‌ها می‌دونستن زندانیشون اونجا هست.
It was clear that the Shah had given the green light to Savvak brutality. In hindsight, Savvak harassment merely fanned the flames of the revolution. Mr. Davud Yazdani, a former political prisoner, was a soldier during the revolution. He was arrested for his political activities inside the garrison and spent a long time incarcerated in the Qasr prison. Now he's working as a guide at the Garden Museum.
Savak's harassment and torture accelerated the downfall of the Shah, and the Iranian people became stronger and stronger and continued the struggle to overthrow the decadent regime.
With draconian power, Savak set a reign of terror that lasted 2 years. Many were arrested, tortured, or even killed on the slightest charges. This era was one of the darkest chapters in the history of modern Iran.
در سال 55 رژیم شاه تصمیم داشت.
In 1976, the regime had decided to put in prison whoever showed the least opposition, thinking that in this way it could reduce the numbers of its opponents.
این عمل میتونه تعداد مخالفینش رو کم کنه. به خاطر همین و به همین علت زندان‌ها.
Therefore, the prisons of the Shah became overcrowded, that is political prisons. At that time, the Qasr prison and others were overcrowded.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Almighty. Dear brothers and sisters, salam. And welcome to this episode of today's special. Dear brothers and sisters, on this episode of today's special, we're going to speak about Islamic Revolution and its achievements. Be with us. First, we look at the calendar. Today, Sunday, is the 14th of Rajab, 1444 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 16th of Bahman, 1401 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 5th of February, 2023 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. For blessing this moment, we listen to Chapter Al Imran, verse 85.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. ومن يبتغ غير الإسلام دينا فلن يقبل منه وهو في الآخرة من الخاسرين.
And whoever desires other than Islam as religion, never will it be accepted from him, and he in the hereafter will be among the losers.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
Dear brothers and sisters, on this episode of today's special, we're going to speak about Islamic Revolution and its achievements. So be with us, but before that, we'll learn more about the items and important points of Chapter Al-Imran, verse 85. All the former prophets have been taken pledge to believe in their following prophet. The whole existing world submits to Allah, and no religion can be accepted except the religion of Allah. The followers of Islam believe in all prophets of Allah and the divine books. This is the feature of the religion of Islam and its convictions. Now the Quran explicitly announces that whoever accepts besides than that, it will not be accepted from him.
IRIB English Radio in the month of Bahman presents
today's special.
As I told you, the topic of this episode of today's special is Islamic Revolution of Iran and its achievements. In the referendum for determining the form of government, over 98% of the Iranian nation voted for the Islamic Republic system. Now, more than 40 years after the resounding triumph of the greatest revolution in the 20th century, the Islamic Republic has provided its efficacy in various domains. In spite of all-out 8-year war, economic sanctions, political pressures, and media hype, the Iranian nation pursued numerous objectives in their uprising against the despotic Pahlavi regime, which were summarized in 3 demands, namely independence, freedom, and Islamic government. The Islamic Republic is no doubt the greatest achievement of the Islamic Revolution.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. This is Ali, and we are going to talk about the Islamic Revolution in Iran and its achievements for more than 4 decades. On the eve of the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution, the outcome of Iran's uprising against the US-backed rule of Mohammad Reza Pahlavi is a hot topic of discussion among Iranians. We're going to talk about the achievements and successes of the revolution in the past 4 decades in various sectors. In the referendum for determining the form of government, over 98% of the Iranian nation voted for the Islamic Republic system. Now, 43 years later, and 43 years after the resounding triumph of the greatest revolution in the 20th century, the Islamic Republic has proved its efficacy in various domains. In spite of all out of 8-year war, economic sanctions, political pressures, and media hype, the Iranian nation pursued numerous objectives in their uprising against the despotic Pahlavi regime, which were summarized in three demands, namely independence, freedom, and Islamic government. The Islamic Republic is, no doubt, the greatest achievement of the Islamic Revolution. This popular system of government has by far exceeded the criteria of the Western democracy and has, in fact, marginalized it as it is popular and democratic in the real sense of the word. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, says, "We brought a novel experience. We adopted democracy from religion. Our democracy is accompanied by spirituality and religion. Hence, it became religious popular rule, became the Islamic Republic."
In the month of Bahman, the month of Islamic Revolution, be with today's special.
This is today's special, an achievements of the Islamic Revolution in the field of health and wellness. With the advancement of medicine and health system in the Islamic Republic of Iran, the causes of death due to infectious diseases and pregnancy and childbirth problems in Iran have decreased. Increasing health services in the Islamic Republic of Iran has caused a change in a composition of death and transformation in the composition of diseases. Raw death rate in Iran, according to the statistics, has decreased from 13 people per 1,000 live birth in 1970 to 1975 to 5 people. According to studies, there has been a general decrease in child death in Iran over the last 4 decades. The expansion of the public health network has also led to a significant reduction in the death of children under the age of 5, which has increased significantly compared to the pre-revolutionary period.
The explosion of light in the modern age of ignorance with the support of Islam. The Islamic Revolution.
Iran Islamic Revolution, achievements of 4-decade great freedom. The Islamic Revolution granted the Iranian nation freedom in various fields. The Iranian nation has been suppressed for centuries, especially during the Pahlavi regime. Any dissent would be quenched and opponents would be jailed, tortured, and murdered. In the Islamic Republic of Iran, people are free to hold legal gatherings and meetings and express their opinion in various matters. They elect officials of the country, including the president, members of the parliament, and city councils. They also elect the members of the assembly of experts who appoint the leader. As for the media, the Islamic Revolution has granted freedom to the media to express their ideas and criticize the officials. Plus, after the Islamic Revolution, the written and audiovisual media have dramatically increased in number.
As we are discussing the impact of Imam al-Khomeini on the contemporary world, it is equally important to discuss the cause and the factors that led to this change and led to the movement that he initiated in Iran, and that is now, and which is now spreading all over the world. If we know the cause and the factors that led to this movement, then that is the path of Imam al-Khomeini Quddisa Sirruh. And if we understand the path of the Imam, that what was the path of the Imam, what was the thought of the Imam, then in light of this thought, we will be able to outline the future of the Muslim Ummah. What was the thinking of this man that he initiated this movement, and he had such a great impact on the lives of millions of people in the world? 3rd of June 1989, a few hours before Imam al-Khomeini passed away, Ayatollah Imami al-Kashani, who is one of the Friday prayer leaders in Iran, in Tehran, he says that we were in the hospital and we were in the room in which Imam was. And he says that we already knew that Imam is in the stage of experiencing the pangs of death. He is already in the stage of Sakaratul Maut. His eyes were closed. And Ayatollah Imam Kashani says that after this, the voice of Adhan rose. It was time of Adhan, and the voice of Adhan came up. He says that as the voice of Adhan was heard in the hospital and in his room, he says that this man, he opened his eyes. He opened his eyes and he says that as if he knew that it is the time of the prayers and I am responsible to stand in front of my Lord. Now this was the worldview of Imam al-Khomeini. He, from the bottom of his heart, he knew that I am here to serve Islam. I am here to serve my Lord and the message of my Lord. The spirit of submission to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala was entrenched in his existence and in his heart. He opened his eyes and he stood for, he was whispering something. He says that I went and I tried listening to him, that what is he saying? He says that I could not listen, I could not understand what the Imam is saying. But in the worldview of the Imam, he says that there is only one Lord who needs to be served, and that is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Dear brothers and sisters, thank you very much for joining us. That is the end of this episode of today's special. We leave you in Allah's blessings. Fi amanallah.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.